All right, I think you are good to go, Chuck.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Good evening. I'd like to call the Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors workshop meeting to order. That's our October 27, 2020 workshop meeting. Mark, do you want to say the things you normally say about how people can participate in tonight's meeting?
Yep, so we have the option. You can raise your hand in the participants bar. You can send a chat to me. We can take comments through chat. You can also send an email into manager@lowerfrederick.org, or you can call the township building and it'll ring here on my cell phone. I have that forwarded to my cell phone. So if you would like to make a comment, use one of those options and we will do everything we can to get you, but we'll get your comment heard, but we'll do everything we can to have it that you can say it to us. Also, just before you keep going, Chuck, the board did have an executive session on October 8th to discuss legal and real estate issues.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Brings us to the Pledge of Allegiance. Arise and say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice
Justice
for
for all.
all. Our announcements for tonight are our standard announcements that the township meetings are recorded for the purpose of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting is going to be recorded by the teleconference provider, which in our case is Zoom. For people requesting, all people requesting to speak before the board, we ask that you state your name, your address, and the subject matter. And that way, when we do the minutes, that we can make sure that they are done accurately and we know who spoke during the meeting. We do have a reasonable agenda tonight. So we do ask that people try to limit their questions to 2 minutes. And that way we can move through our agenda items. That brings us to our first item tonight, which is our update on Ziegler-Ville home heating oil release on Ziegler-Ville Road.
Yes, so I was in conversations with DEP earlier this week. They are continuing to work with the EPA to get funding to do an assessment of the property on Ziegler-Ville Road. They're also, we were going to try one more time to go up and have Mr. Hockel sign the paperwork to have someone on his property willingly. The county adult aging and seniors went up to talk with Mr. Hockel, and it was a pretty tense conversation. He's getting more and more aggravated with people being on. We did have an officer with that group when they went up. But after that discussion with them and the officer, there's no way that anyone thought that he's going to sign anything for anyone, especially a government agency. So relayed that to DEP, and they are going to work on the court order to get that so that they can get on the property to do an assessment. So the county was out. They've since closed their file since he does not want help. And like I said, that was a pretty contentious meeting when they were there. So that's where that's at. But DEP and EPA are still working to get the funding put together and send it through the court system. The township has also put their information in and done the citations through the court, and we have not heard back on those yet.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Do we have any questions from the board for Mark on this item? Hearing none, any questions from the public on this item? Okay, thank you.
Hey, sorry, Chuck, I was not quick enough to chime in. Mark, did they give you any sense of timing, the DP and folks?
No, they're working to get the funding through the Coast Guard. They have to get that approved through the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard takes, as odd as it sounds, in the middle of Pennsylvania, the Coast Guard takes over oil spill assessments and cleanups if the money comes through the federal government. And the process through the courts, you know, can take a little while.
Okay.
I'll try to get better information on timing for our next meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And yep. Yes, it does sound odd to have the Coast Guard be in charge, but
yes,
it is what it is. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. That brings us to our next agenda item, which is a presentation by Jennifer Orr Green from Trout Unlimited. And Jennifer will be speaking about open space impact on waterways. So welcome, Jennifer. I think Mark is going to transfer control over to you so you can show your presentation.
Yep. All right. There's Jen. And go ahead. You should be able to share screen, Jen.
Okay. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yes.
All right. Give me just a second here to get my screen ready for you. So that I can share it with you all. Oops, sorry. Did that the wrong, in the wrong order. All right, and can you all see my screen? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we yes. can.
Okay. So thank you to Mark for the invitation to come and speak tonight, and to all the members of the board and any members of the public for inviting me to come and talk about this topic. Happy to have the discussion and talk a little bit about impact and the relationship of open space with aquatic resources. I am Jennifer Orr Green. I am the Eastern Policy Director for Trout Unlimited. I am based in central Pennsylvania, but work on regulatory policy and legislative issues throughout the Mid-Atlantic and upper Midwest. So I'm gonna hop right on in here to the presentation. So tonight, as I speak to you about open space, the term that I'm going to be, as I use the term in my presentation, I'm going to be defining open space using kind of a little bit of a modified definition from the Environmental Protection Agency. And so that is essentially lands that are protected from development, they're open for public use, and that are often protected or preserved by some sort of mechanism for into the future. And so you can see here, can you see my pointer on the screen? Kind of, maybe? No, okay.
No, I cannot.
Okay. So you'll see there on the left, the upper left, we have areas that are sometimes kind of more meadows or fallow field type of areas. We can have open spaces that are used for things like playgrounds and parks. On the lower left there, we have some areas that are kind of more wetland marsh areas. And in the center and the lower right, more trails and or other types of aquatic or water dependent types of uses that we use for open spaces. So I'm gonna talk about, so let's take a look at open spaces through an aquatic system lens. And I'm going to talk about four major attributes of open spaces that are linked with aquatic ecosystem health this evening. So we're going to talk about riparian buffers and their functions, natural floodplains and their functions, some of the benefits of lands that are non-impervious or reducing the amount of impervious land uses. And we're going to talk a little bit about the impacts that intact landscapes, such as those in open spaces, that they can provide in reducing pollutants delivered to streams. Okay, that is by no means also a thoroughly comprehensive list. Those are just four major ones that I'm going to hit on this evening. So the first attribute of open spaces that are important to aquatic systems are riparian buffers. So when I use the term riparian buffers in this presentation, I'm going to use them kind of interchangeably, whether I'm talking about either a forested riparian buffer or something that's non-forested. A lot of times they're referred to as, you know, meadow riparian buffers or other types of vegetated riparian buffers, but not forested. So keep that in mind. Although when I do talk some about riparian buffers, some of the services that are provided by buffers are much enhanced in forested buffers as compared to some of the other types of buffers. Things like shading, obviously, inputs of woody debris, again. So some of those things can vary depending on what type of buffer we're talking about. So the key ecosystem services that are delivered by riparian buffers, courtesy of the Pennsylvania Land Trust Association, include things like reducing erosion, filtering both sediments and other types of pollution and pollutants to the streams, providing shade, as I discussed, and habitat for aquatic organisms, and also being able to store water and reduce flooding. However, our buffers in Pennsylvania in many areas are in trouble. And you can see there that quote from the USDA Forest Service, which is actually part of the Pennsylvania DEP Stormwater Management Manual. And what that says is that over one third of the streams and rivers in Pennsylvania have had their riparian buffers either degraded or altered. And so one of the important roles that open space can play is that it can allow for the protection for these types of habitats, for buffers, for either protection, enhancement, convert, or establishment of these types of buffers.
Jen, you're muted by accident.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, we got you now.
Okay, all right. Sorry about that. I'll hop back in. I wasn't able to make that transition without hopping out of the slideshow. So let me get back in just a second.
Just so you know, when we see it, you're in presenter view.
Okay.
Under display settings at the top.
There we go. Is that better?
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So, okay. So then buffers, as I talked about, are pretty resilient. And with just a little bit of maintenance, they can establish in a few years. So what I'm showing you here is a case study from Austin, Texas, that shows basically a time series of the stream over time. And you can see that in this particular case, this landowner had some land that they wanted to go from a mowed condition to a full riparian buffer condition. And so it didn't take long. That first year of growth there, you can see, is mostly kind of, you know, some shrubs and small grasses, things like that, but it wasn't too long till we got to more of a forested condition. And this then provides shade and cooler temperatures for cold water species. It decreased the amount of erosion and runoff. And as we continue to think into the future about things like climate change, Riparian buffers are actually really one of the key ways that we can, one of the key management practices that we can use to sequester carbon as part of some of our ways to address climate change going into the future. So the next attribute of open space that has aquatic ecosystems links is in the reestablishment or and or restoration of floodplains. So I'm showing you here some views of a case study in Brubaker Run in Lancaster County, where we have a stream corridor. So you can see there kind of the sinuous stream going back and forth along that almost kind of like a track there. You can see that the outer limits. Stream corridors restored through these sinuous channels. And also over here on the lower right-hand corner are some of the associated marsh or wetland type of areas that are established, that were established when this restoration project through this corridor was completed. And so these types of features, actually the fish that you see there is a creek chub. And that's one of a pretty common fish here in Pennsylvania in our stream. And so these types of habitats down here on the bottom actually serve as nurseries for young fishes. And where there are young, tiny fishes, there are generally lots of things that like to eat them. So they have nice aquatic food web effects. And in addition, not only do we have some ecosystem effects here from this floodplain restoration and stream corridor preservation work, but when we have higher flood flows, instead of kind of going a chute down through this stream very quickly, we actually have this more sinuous channel that allows water to spread out, use the entire floodplain there to spread out at a lower, a slower rate, and it allows for actually attenuation of some of those flood flows. So not only does it have that ecosystem benefit, but it also has there a public resource and essentially a flood mitigation benefit. And this is just another example similar to the one I showed you before. This one's actually out in Idaho, where we're using open space on this gentleman. This was actually a private landowner, so this doesn't fit our definition particularly well, so pardon me for that. But this is more of shows you that when we're doing these types of floodplain restoration projects, they have these benefits for restoring the floodplain. In this one in particular, it increased the fish habitat in the number of pools that went up, and also it increased the amount of habitat, different types of habitat, so habitat heterogeneity. It provided stabilization to the stream bed and reduced the amount of sediment being transported through. It stabilized the temperature. There you can see on the bottom kind of our temperature through time, and you can see that over time it became more stable, that the ranges weren't quite as large. And that's especially important for fishes and other types of aquatic organisms, that we have good temperature ranges for them, and not a whole lot of, especially for cold water fishes, a lot of very warm temperature extremes. And then it also provides an area again for flood flow attenuation, the same as in the previous slide. So the third attribute then of open space that provides benefits for aquatic systems is the prevention of further impervious surface creation or the restoration of impervious to non-impervious surface, the restoration of impervious to non-impervious areas. So what you're looking at here is essentially a graph that's been put together by the Maryland Department of the Environment or Environmental Resources, I think Department of Environmental Resources, where they looked at data throughout Maryland over a large number of years. And they found that there's a very strong gradient that is related to impervious surfaces and how that relates to healthy aquatic organisms and stream health. So you can see over there on the left, when we have areas where we have watershed conditions where impervious surfaces are less than 5%, generally these are in our forested headwater type of streams. We have really outstanding cool, clear water. This is where a lot of our brook trout like to live. These are pretty, temperatures are low, and we have really great aquatic insects. We go all the way over to the right-hand side, where we're getting to greater than 20% watershed impervious surfaces. You're seeing that essentially we're getting down to only tolerant types of fishes and invertebrates present. And that somewhere in that sweet spot between 5 and 20%, we kind of start beginning to tip that balance between healthy and non-healthy aquatic systems. So one of the really great functions of open space then is that, one, it can prevent these areas, prevent lands from being covered in impervious surfaces, which is one way to get at this, or the kind of opposite of this, which is in areas where we would do open space preservation, we can also essentially take something that maybe is already impervious and restore it and move the needle the opposite way. So then our final attribute that I was going to talk about this evening of open space that provides benefits to aquatic systems is, is natural conditions in open spaces that can help in controlling pollutants that are delivered to the waters, to the water itself. And so this can be done through vegetation that's present in those lands by things that are, there's often larger setback distances in open space areas between a stream and any sort of disturbance or development that may be present in the area, and any sort of, as I mentioned, disturbed land uses. So the sediment pollutants, or I'm sorry, the pollutants getting to the stream can be blocked either essentially by vegetation. So in that case, it can actually stop overland flow and collect pollutants from the runoff. So this could be something like, think about, you could get a rainstorm, you have something that comes into an open space preserve type of area, and the water could, you know, run down towards the stream. We have really great vegetation, and in that vegetation, it would essentially drop out things like gravels and stuff that comes off of road surfaces. And so that would essentially be there, and that wouldn't make it into the stream. So that's a pretty visible one. But we also have soils and plants in those riparian areas then. So you have the pretty obvious one of particulates like gravels and things like that. But then you could also have things like oils, salts, things like that, that may be dissolved that come in as those runoff, in that runoff, and that sometimes that vegetation can actually take those up, incorporate those, or soil microbes can actually process them. They're kind of in situ within that buffer or that area itself. And also there's a prevention. So it's not just physically in the buffer itself stopping overland flow, but it's also essentially in vegetation that holds those stream banks there. So things like essentially woody shrubs, large trees, root wads, things like that, that keep the stream banks from eroding, as you see there in that right-hand side picture, and keeps the strength there so that it doesn't allow essentially bank erosion to occur and that sediment to be delivered to the stream. And so I talked essentially about four kind of major benefits to aquatic systems from open space. But I just wanted to touch really briefly that while those are kind of our major benefits, they rarely come alone, right? So a lot of these benefits that we have and functions actually are kind of stacked, right? So we were just talking about decreasing sediment pollution using these open spaces. Not only does that then reduce the amount of pollutants getting into water, but it also helps to protect that as a clean drinking water source. When we're talking about riparian buffers and habitats, not only does that help with aquatic ecosystems, but it also provides wildlife habitat and corridors for terrestrial organisms. And some of these areas of open space can also sometimes play a role in helping municipalities to meet regulatory requirements by acting as areas for things like green infrastructure, rain gardens, other types of stormwater management. So there's often a lot of times the co-benefits that come along with these open spaces when they are used for an aquatic ecosystem benefit. So with that, I will actually, here's my information if you have any questions after, but I believe I can take some questions now, correct?
Yep, yeah, we'll see if the board has any questions.
Stop sharing here.
Does anybody have any boards? Anybody on the board have any questions for Jen? Jen, thank you very much for the presentation, by the way. I appreciate that. So the
hi Jen, this is Marla Hextra. I had a question. Can you describe the difference in benefit between like planting grasses or shrubs and trees? Do you want to have everything, or like are trees better than shrubs, or shrubs better than grasses?
So it's kind of in some ways that's in the eye of the beholder type of question. A lot of the research kind of conventionally up until pretty recently has almost always sided with forested riparian buffers having greater amounts of things like pollutant reduction potential, ability to uptake water, you know, and things like that. And so in that case, essentially, to date, a lot of the research says, well, riparian forested buffers are better as an ecosystem benefit. However, some research lately has been coming out that is saying, not always. In some cases, some of, especially buffers that may be more meadow. So we have some sort of woody types of vegetation, but not necessarily like huge trees. Like for example, maybe some shrubs or something like that. There are some studies that have recently been coming out that are saying that there's a pretty good and comparable benefit there. So, and the reason why I'm saying it's in the eye of the beholder is essentially kind of not every type of vegetation is right for every situation, right? So it may not be that the site that you're dealing with is a good site to have trees on for whatever reason. It may be that it's better to go with something that's a little bit more grasses, scrub type of buffer. So it is kind of a, generally the literature goes towards more of a pollutant benefit, a better shading benefit, obviously with a forested buffer. And inputs of things like large woody debris. So again, for food for organisms, fishes, and good habitat structure. But it's not always the best choice for that's the situation on your site.
Thank you.
Jennifer, this is Dan Orf. I had a question related to stream bank erosion. Is that a cyclical process? I mean, because I noticed there's some streams nearby where I live where the banks seem to be being eroded more quickly than they have in these most recent years. There's the bank erosion has been pretty significant, whereas previous to, you know, I'll say 5 to 10 years ago, it was seemed to be more stable. And we're talking about a forested area with like small trees and some very large trees. So I was just wondering if it's cyclical, is that related to some of the climate scenarios we're working through, or I just, my opinion on that would be appreciated.
It could be a lot of things. And probably the way that I would approach that is, you know, a lot of keys for changes in stream banks, and especially if you're noticing something that is happening quite a bit more quickly than it may have done in the past, or you know, something along those lines, is I would look to the what's going on. Are there changes in your watershed upstream, right? So it could be a number of things. There could be, you know, climate could be a piece of it. There could be, you know, we've had more and heavier and more intense storms, you know, in the past number of years. Could be that. Could be that there is more, you know, development, residential, commercial, whatever going on upstream. Could be a change there. So it could be more, you know, overland flow. There's a lot of different reasons why that could be happening. But the keys to that usually are to take a look at, okay, well, you know, 2 years ago, I noticed the conditions were like this, and now I'm seeing this. What has changed? You know, what has happened in that intervening time that could give some clues? And, you know, we're dealing with processes here that are really complex, right? It's not generally like, you know, you turn one knob and it has this one singular effect. So there's almost always pretty complex solutions, but that at least gives you something to kind of start with as a framework and, you know, a working hypothesis of areas that you could investigate further to see what may be a root cause.
Okay. So does some of the collapse in some of the tree species, like the ash is all dying off and a lot of oaks dying off, would that have an impact on it?
It could, depending on if you're having large trees that before may have held up banks, you know, collapsing and falling into a stream or something like that. Maybe, you know, that they were creating bank stability before, and now that they're gone, those banks may be unstable and maybe eroding, or, you know, they could have fallen into a channel and, you know, water is a dynamic thing, right? It's going to dissipate energy. And so if you get a tree in the middle of the stream, it's going to find a new way around and, you know, cause erosion in some places and deposition in others. So it could be one of the things. But again, you know, I would start with that, you know, what's different in the watershed upstream. Right. And start kind of looking at those cues as to how to tease out some of those issues.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Jennifer. I think, do we have any other questions at this point? I think, I know we have a pretty full agenda tonight, so I'd like to move on, but thank you very much, Jennifer, and cool scarf, by the way. I didn't say that at the beginning.
Thank you.
And I think, you know, one of the takeaways too that I get out of this is that you need to, it always helps to have partners, because this is not just a site specific issue. It's a much larger issue, you know, working with networks of in different groups.
Yeah. Thank you for having me this evening. If you have any other questions, my information's there, and I'm going to leave you for this evening. Have a good rest of your meeting.
Thank you very much. Jen.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, we have public comments on agenda items. Do we have any comments from the public on our agenda for tonight?
I am not seeing anything, Chuck.
Okay, so we'll move on to our first agenda item, which is a request for fire police support for an upcoming event.
Yeah, so we got a request from the Heidelberg Church for the use of the fire police for their upcoming barbecue drive-through dinner for social distancing. It's drive-through this year. The dinner is planned for Saturday, November 14th from 3 to 5. So if you guys would like to approve the fire police to be used at that event, that would be great. And then if anyone, I'll give them a plug since they asked for fire police. If you're in the Heidelberg United Church area on November 14th and you're looking for some barbecue, to swing over to the church.
Mark, I have no problem with providing support. This is Chuck Geiser.
Do we need to vote on it or anything? Because it's fine by me as well.
Just the verbal is fine for this.
Yep, no objection.
No objection.
No objection.
And I will say some of the proceeds are going to go to Daily Bread Food Pantry, which is a very worthy cause.
Yep.
So, Mark, I don't know whether you want to post something on, maybe put this thing up on the website, that if we could do that, advertise it.
I'll talk to Reverend Tierson.
Okay.
See what they're looking to do. I don't know if they're doing call aheads. Let me just get some more details before I commit to that. Good. All right, then.
Brings us to our next agenda item, which is a request from a resident. I think it's 203 Silverbrook.
Yeah, we have a request. Go ahead. We have a request from the Tuckets at 203 Silverbrook Drive to connect to the public sanitary sewer system. The sewer main that runs along Zieglerville Road, when that was installed, it actually was installed over this property with the former landowner at that time. But when that main line was put in, there was a lateral was put in for this property for whenever they were going to connect to make it easier to connect to the main. So the lateral is on their property. So all work will be done on their property. Just need the board's, again, verbal okay. And just letting you know that, you know, this property owner wants to connect. And then if the board's okay with it, we'll get the connection fee taken care of and the plumbing permit, and we'll get them connected up to the public sewer system.
I have no objection.
No objection.
No objection.
No objection.
No objection.
All right. So, thank you. I will let Greg know tomorrow.
This application was received in the early October. One of the things, and I don't want to belabor it tonight because we have a lot to do, but I think for these types of situations, I know what happened in 2019, but I think for these types of situations that are very straightforward, I think it would be prudent for us to come up with a more streamlined process.
I agree.
I mean, this is very straightforward. It's occurring on the applicant's property. There's a lateral. There's one home being connected. Typically, this would be handled directly by the manager. So think about it. We don't need to do anything tonight. The other thing that was brought to my attention is that, you know, we have had situations where grinder pumps have been installed as part of something like this, where our engineer actually has to get involved. To date, we've not been recovering our costs of reviewing those types of things and supporting them from a township level. And I think that we down the road want to treat this similar to what we've done when a development comes in, that they have an engineering services agreement so that we can recoup some of our costs in supporting these connections. Again, not for tonight, but something we might want to think about not too far down the road.
Chuck, this is Marla. I think what I would suggest, if anyone else thinks it's a good idea, is that we come up with a SOP, standard operating procedures, for these. So as you say, in these situations, no objection by email is acceptable. In these situations, public approval is acceptable. In these situations, we do an agreement with an engineer, just to come up with a plan of action for the three or four different situations we may encounter. And that way we can deal with them as they come along in that manner.
Yeah, I mean, for this thing, is, you know, there's no reason the app person requesting should wait a full month for a monthly meeting, you know, depending upon where they come in the cycle. So
that's exactly what I'm saying, is we come up with a way of approaching this in future. And maybe, I don't know if Mark, you can do it on your own, or you want to work with Carol, or just come up with those four or five different scenarios we might have, and then we can just approve that, and then it'll just happen.
That's good. I like that. We can work on that.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Next agenda item is the Goshen Road Sidewalk Project Update.
I think that's me,
Carol
Schuler, Township Engineer. So the Goshen Road Sidewalk Project is well underway. It's nearly complete, except for application of some pavement markings. The pavement markings have to be installed, and that's about it. We're recommending that the board consider a progress payment in the amount of $88,953.01. This would be a payment of 95% of the value of the work completed to date. The project was initially awarded with the change order at $105,205, and the construction contract is on track to come in slightly under budget at $102,245. So we're in good shape on this project.
Perfect.
Any questions?
Yeah, any questions for our engineer?
No, we're going to vote on this next week, correct?
Yeah, we can vote on it next week.
I think just a consent to have them prepare the check would probably be sufficient, right?
Yeah, we'll vote on it next week.
Right.
Yep.
No, that's great, Carol. I think we were all pretty amazed how quickly this project happened. So that's great. And I guess they also had good weather during the time that they worked.
We had one storm that tried to wash some soil away, but for the most part, they were just so efficient at getting through there that they got that all done and the grass growing.
Great. Thank you.
Carol, just one question. Do we have to complete the entire project and pay for it before we can request reimbursement, or can we do it in, like, if we give them a check now, can we request reimbursement for that amount?
I will check on the grant agreement, Marla. I'm not sure off the top of my head. The county is reimbursing up to $102,533 on this project. So it's a lot of money coming back to the township. I will check on the scheduling of that.
Thank you.
Don't go away, Carol. You're the next item.
Great.
our next agenda item is the Swamp Creek Culvert Grant.
Thank you. So the township has been awarded a grant for the installation of a culvert under Swamp Creek Road. The grant amount of $77,784 is expected to pay for bidding and construction of this project. The township needs to execute the dirt, gravel, and low volume road project agreement now to secure the grant. Just looking forward, bidding a project in January or February is always recommended to get best prices from contractors when they're lining up work for next season. So the board might wish to consider authorizing preparation of the bid package in December for advertising in January and opening bids in February. That way you would have a March award and work could be underway in April or May of 2021. So the request tonight is authorization to sign the project agreement to get that grant going forward.
Okay. Any questions for our engineer on this? So again, this is a project, as I remember from the numbers, where essentially our skin in the game is roughly 10% of the cost. Is that
yes, actually, your any cost that you have incurred to date were essentially your skin in the game for the design and permitting of this. And the grant is expected to cover both the actual construction and the construction administration and inspection costs.
Okay. Yeah, I think, what was it, $77,800 roughly?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. All right. So that's something we'll approve next week, Mark?
Yep. Yeah, we'll just have to approve the signatures.
Okay. And that brings us to the Fulmer Road Riverside Avenue Sanitary Sewer Extension discussion. I'll let you guide that one, Mark.
Yep. Give me a second here. I'm bringing Bob in.
So we do have with us tonight Bob Preston, who was our sewage engineer. Is that the right water? Wastewater engineer. Is that
wastewater engineer. Yep.
Sorry, Bob.
Fine, thank you.
All right, so the sewer expansion project on Fulmer and Riverside has been a long discussed topic of the township. At the end of 2019, the township submitted for a H2O grant to fund a significant portion of the project. We were waiting for that information to come back. It was supposed to come back in June, then it got pushed back, and we weren't supposed to hear it till September. So we were waiting to get information on that grant to see how we were going to proceed. The township unfortunately found out in middle to late August that we did not receive that grant. So after we got that unfortunate information, I started to work with Bob, and as Bob was new to the township as a engineer, wastewater engineer, and Carol, to kind of start looking at the Fulmer Riverside project and come up with options. So I kind of let Bob explain where he is on you know, reviewing this project.
Thank you, Mark. Again, this is Bob Preston. Right now we're looking at reviewing the original gravity design plans. We've previously went out for a estimate from a local contractor to see, you know, what it would come in today's market. It came in very close to what was stated back in 2018, you know, a little bit higher 2 years later. But we're looking at it now to see what we can do to trim it up and reduce the size of the contract a little bit more to streamline it, make it more efficient and cost less. So there, and that's what we're doing now. Is there any questions?
Any questions for Bob?
We have any, I'm sure the citizens would ask this, so I'll ask it, do we have any kind of timing on these projects?
We're hoping to have options together in early November, once we hear back from the couple contractors that Bob has contacted, so that we can start to produce options for the board to look at. To give direction on how to proceed. I know they're looking at, like, the pump station. What's an alternative to the pump station? Or, you know, is it a buried pump station with a building? Do we get rid of the building, save some money? What are the alternate sewering methods to try to, you know, alleviate some things with that? So I know Bob's been looking at many different things and just trying to get heard back from all the contractors to get good numbers so that we have accurate information to give you when it's prepared.
Great, thanks.
Very
thanks,
well Mark. Said, Mark.
So you think possibly that next week you might have some information for us to start looking at? Is that next week's
early? Next week might be early November, maybe not the 1st of November. But within the first 2 weeks, yes.
Great.
Okay.
And Bob, you mentioned maybe tightening some of the items on the scope. Maybe I mean, does it impact the houses or number of houses that we were talking about before that would be serviced by this, or is it just making other changes?
Oh, we're trying to do other changes. We do want to connect as many as possible. So they could be pavement, the required pavement down. As just one example, you know, we're really looking at every possible way or everything we can do to tighten it up.
We did look at that a little bit, Terry, but it seemed like if you stop something, it didn't save that much money to take someone out, and then you lost, you know, connection fees, and then it didn't really.
Okay. Kind of. Yeah, I don't know if it was any kind of drastic changes from that. I think it's been close to a year since anyone's kind of seen any of the sketches. So I just was curious on how big of a change.
Mostly it's in the equipment and that kind of stuff. Okay. Trying to figure out ways to do less excavation, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
So basically we have a fixed amount of money and we're trying to see what we can accomplish and how we can accomplish it for that amount of money.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
We do have a question from the public. Hold on a second there. One second there, Paula.
Hi, my name is Paula Mandraki. Hi there.
Hi.
Paula Mandraki. I live here on Riverside Avenue. And I guess my question's from a slightly different perspective. And that is, you know, especially given, you know, the presentation we just had from Jennifer earlier, I'm wondering about being able to reduce the amount of impervious surfaces. I mean, we're right here on Riverside Avenue. It's basically, you know, abuts against a riparian buffer area. And I think honestly, obviously no one's necessarily thrilled about being required to tap in, but that's not actually my major concern. My major concern is that Riverside is going to be permanently altered and kind of lose the small street feel that it is. We already have issues with people who travel very quickly through here. And without that wicked bend, I could see people tearing through here at like 45 plus miles an hour. And, you know, the amount of trees that have to be cut and just the permanent alterations, the width of the road. And like the increasing the impervious surface, we already deal with a lot of runoff from above us. So he has a homeowner, but I'm also thinking in terms of the quality of the watershed.
Thank you, Paula. Bob or Carol, can you speak to that? I don't remember us doing any road widening, but.
On the plans that were approved in 2017, the Riverside Avenue has a limited amount of widening because there's a pump station proposed at the bottom of Riverside Avenue, and it's simply too narrow right now for vehicles to get to it that would be used to install the pump station or to access the pump station for service. Riverside is very narrow. A large truck can't get down there. So there was limited widening on Riverside in the plan that was approved in 2017. And that does in the short term impact some trees on the upslope side to accommodate that widening. There is, however, Stormwater Management Incorporated into the plan in accordance with the NPDES construction permit. That's a state permit that requires us to manage any additional stormwater that's generated by the project. And there are stormwater management facilities incorporated into that 2017 design as well. So I hope that helps to answer the question, but certainly as we're looking at modifications that could be made to this project, we will keep those comments in mind.
Just to follow up on that, and what what Paula said, when Bob, Mr. Preston is exploring options, hopefully we can explore options that further minimize the disruption to the road surface, and if at all possible, even eliminate any widening, because I can understand a lot of people have moved to this community because of the village-like character of some of the streets and roadways. So it would be, I can understand where Paul is coming from. It would be upsetting to lose that type of character, because that's why a lot of people are here. So hopefully, Mr. Preston, that's something we can try to think about when you're doing your explorations.
Thank you. I have a note of it to look into it.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
We have Warren. Give me a second here.
Got it. Carol, why would we need to access with equipment to the pumping station from Riverside up by Paula's house? That would be insane to try to drive trucks down that road. Why wouldn't you come there from Fulmer Road?
It is coming from Fulmer Road down Babington and then turning down Riverside. And the problem is that Riverside is not wide enough right now to accommodate the vehicles that would need to get down to the pump station for construction activity and for future pumping of that station.
But that's not what Paul is talking about. She's talking about Riverside Avenue up the hill.
Now she's I believe, and Paula can correct me if she's wrong, she's at the corner of Babington and Riverside, and I believe she's referencing the widening on the section of Riverside between the low point where the pump station would go and Babington, because we don't have any widening proposed between the pump station and going up towards Crystal.
I think you had a little misunderstanding there.
That's correct.
Paula, go ahead, Paula.
My connection isn't great. Buses, oil diver trucks, garbage trucks, they all fit on Riverside Avenue. Now, they don't fit side by side, two at a time, but the amount of time that happens is never. So I can't imagine what size truck has to kind of service this pump station if it's larger than a garbage truck or an oil delivery truck, because we all have oil here on Riverside Avenue. And thank you very much for your comment. That's right on.
Although we lost you, I think we heard you though. Other trucks are getting down the road. And Bob, Carol, and I will look at that and try to get some information. If you want to call me at the township, we can talk some more too.
Thank you, Paula, for your comments. And I do encourage you to, make your concerns known and communicate with Mark, so that we can make sure that, we hear your concerns and we're on top of them. Okay, any other questions for either Carol or Bob? Great.
I'm not seeing any at this time.
All right. Hearing none, that brings us to our next agenda item, which is our budget presentation.
All right, give me a second here. I gotta switch up everything. Okay. At our last meeting in the beginning of October, I gave everyone, you know, an introduction to how we were working on the budget. Again, with that, I met with the department heads, I've met with the treasurer, and in getting ready to prepare this for the township and for the board. Again, we met on October 6th and did an introduction. Today is the 27th. My first presentation, November 4th, we'll do a tentative adoption of the 2021 township budget. November 5th, that budget, if it is approved, will be available for public review at the township building, and we will put an advertisement in the paper that we have the budget ready. Then we hope to adopt the budget on December 1st at our meeting then. COVID-19 is definitely still a concern. As we haven't been hit with it very hard yet this year, we continue to monitor the EIT taxes and that situation. And, you know, as you currently are, if you listen to the news, if you can listen to the news, we're currently in a rise. They're saying the second or third wave of the COVID is coming. Pretty much every state is in an upswing for COVID cases. So, you know, the future is uncertain. Berkheimer, who collects our income tax, is still giving us the estimate of, you know, $3,800 to $4,200 a month below. And they're kind of going back to 2019, what our estimates were in 2019, or what our actual collections were in 2019. So in 2019, we collected around 850 some thousand. So that puts us at around 800,000 in collections this year and next year. Like I said, right now, we haven't seen it too hard yet. Our EIT in the beginning of 2020, we're still collecting from 2019. So obviously in 2019, we didn't even know what COVID was. So everything was, you know, moving along swimmingly. So our EIT isn't as far behind as it may be because our collections in the beginning of 2020 were from 2019. In planning for 2021, unknowns that could impact the EIT, how many employees will be called back to work as restrictions are eased, how many employees were called back to work and unpaid and paid due to loans under the Paycheck Protection Program, but maybe laid off if that money runs out. We're not sure how long that Paycheck Protection Program is going to keep going. Just the long-term economic impacts, and you know how many businesses are never going to reopen. You know, you hear about restaurants going out of business on a regular basis, and some, you know, retail stores and such. So, not to dwell on COVID. The general fund for this year, right now our real estate tax collections are on par with past years. Real estate transfer tax has been very strong, with the township seeing many homes sold during the year. As COVID is impacting things, we're actually in like a seller's market, I guess they call it, so many houses are being sold. Earned income tax, like we just talked about, is, you know, what we expect to be most impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. So we continue to keep a close eye on those numbers. And at this time, we're just seeing a slight decrease in from our 2019 earnings. The cable franchises fees continue to decrease as more and more residents stop purchasing cable subscriptions. So this is your Comcast and Verizon. If you have Comcast and Verizon cable, then, you know, the township gets a small percentage of that. Permits for building and zoning are over budget. Many residents did home improvement projects while they stayed home, and we had several new homes built in 2020. Overall, in 2020, we're expecting the revenue to be slightly higher than budgeted. Expenditures in 2020 due to the COVID pandemic, we pulled back on some things as we didn't know what was going to happen. When everyone, you know, was out of work in March, April, May, you know, it was a scary time. So we did not do line painting this year. We did not hire a part-time parks employee, and the township took a very conservative approach to spending money, and we tried to save wherever we could. We shopped the market for property and liability insurance and found a policy with better coverage at a lower cost. Other areas where we accomplished the savings are engineering, legal fees, ice and snow removal. The winters can affect the municipal budget quite a bit. So with the warmer winter that we had last year, you know, snow and ice was not as much of a factor. Overages, so we are spending more in the building inspector group, and many of the budget groups are very close to projected. Obviously, as a lot of people did more home improvement projects than anyone expected, the building inspector then costs more. We do expect expenditures will come in under budget in 2020. Moving on to general fund for next year. We expect revenue to be flat with decreases in earned income tax due to COVID. Permits, we're expecting that new home construction will be lower than it was in 2020. The real estate transfer tax, we also expect to slow down a little bit as the new homes are not going to be sold. And again, the cable franchise agreements continue to decrease as residents move to online only with all the Netflix and other types of options. So the total taxes paid by a resident, so the average home in Lower Frederick is assessed at around $130,000. So the total taxes for all taxes for that home for property tax are $5,355. As you can see below, it's broken out. The school district is 34.51 mils. The county's 3.46 mils. The county community college is 0.39 mils. The township is 2.35 mils. And then the fire company is 0.27 mils and the ambulance is 0.2 mils. So as residents, you get two tax bills. So the graph on the lower right, like the little Pac-Man looking guy. So your tax bill, 84% of the taxes that you pay go to the school district. And then the other tax bill that you get is from the township and county combined, and that's about 16% of the total taxes that a resident pays in Lower Frederick Township. This is, again, just another way to look at the mills as a percentage. The 84% is the school district, and then tried to break out the rest of the taxes by percentage. So the 8% is the county, the 1% is the community college, the 6% is the township, and then the green and the purple are the fire company and the ambulance. Just trying to show it a couple different ways as different people visualize things differently. So real estate property tax in Lower Frederick, again, on that average $130,000 house, the average bill to the township is $306. The average tax for the fire company is $35, and the ambulance is $26. So the total average property tax bill in Lower Frederick Township is $367, and the total collections expected in 2021 are around $600,000. In earned income tax, the township collects half a percent from residents' earnings, and the total collections expected in 2021 are approximately $800,000. So here's a graph that shows the total expected revenue. So the total expected revenue that the township is looking at for next year is $1,914,625. As you can see, most of that comes from taxes, then license permits, intergovernmental is like the grants, fines and forfeits is the police, charges for services more of the permits and that kind of stuff, and then there's a small amount of miscellaneous. That's kind of a breakout of the whole expected revenue for 2021. And the general fund for expenditures, we're looking at, we're working with the park board for park improvements and programming in 2021. Line painting is a high priority as it hasn't been done in the last 2 years. Body cameras for the police department. We're already looking into grants that will help us defray some of the cost of those cameras. Looking to update, we have to update our MS4 stormwater ordinance next year due to our MS4 permit. Also looking at updating the storm sewer map, which is part of that ordinance and part of our MS4 permit. Also, as we're learning this year, we need to review and update some of our outdated ordinances. Carol just spoke about the Swamp Creek Culvert grant, as that will be covered mostly by the grant. It's an important project for next year. I'm currently still working on trying to get a quote for an emergency generator for the township building to include the police and possibly the ambulance area. I did have a gentleman out today to start preparing a quote. So I hope to have much more information by next week or the end of this week. Unfortunately, that has been a very difficult. I'm up to 7 electrical contractors now, and this is the second one I had come out. The first one I have not gotten a quote from. So I continue to call contractors to try to get someone to come out. As I said before, as people are doing improvements, it seems like everyone is doing an emergency generator because every electrical contractor is booked solid. Continue to have roads to pave and repair, and need to continue to watch the dead ash trees and remove those from township parks. If anyone has questions, just stop me. Expenditures, Mark, broken out.
Sorry, Mark, this is Marl. I have a question. Yep. Do you know how many of the homes at Arcadia Station that they're planning on building are completed? And are they planning on finishing all of them in 2021?
They plan to have most of them completed by the end of 2020. I think we only actually have 3 that they have not paid for the connection fee and gotten the permit for. So there's only 3 left, 3 lots left that they are not, you know, currently pursuing. So yes, it'll definitely be complete by the end of 2021, and not expecting much revenue out of permits or anything from there next year.
Thank you.
Yep, no problem. All right, so our expenditures for next year expected to come in. Now, this is without the emergency generator. Right now, unfortunately, I'd be throwing a wild guess at the emergency generator, so I'm trying to get a much more accurate number so that I'm not throwing a wild number out there. So our expenditures in 2021 are, you know, budgeted at $2,053,750. Public safety, police are our highest line item, then public works, general government, the fire company, legal and engineering, building inspectors and zoning, and Health and Human Services, the building, tax collection, our parks, and our emergency management. A couple more slides on this. So this kind of shows you a pie chart in the percentages, where the last slide was actual dollar figures, with the police and public safety come in as 34% of the budget, public works and highways at 25%, general government at 17%, and then the rest of the taxes are much smaller percentages that round out the entire budget for the general fund.
Sorry, Mark, I've got one more question. The tax collection, the one for tax collection, does that include Berkheimer and what we pay our tax collector combined into one amount?
Correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And I will post this on the website tomorrow, so if anyone, you know, it will be out there tomorrow as a PDF for anyone who'd like. So for the general fund, our expected revenue in 2021 is the $1,914,625. Our expected expenditure is $2,053,750, leaving us with a budget deficit of $139,125. As of October 2nd, the township has $1,676,652 in reserves. So Lower Frederick Township can consider utilizing the reserves to cover the end. Anticipated budget deficit for 2021.
Mark, this is Chuck.
Yep.
Before we move on, regarding the generator, I think I had talked to you once about this, whether there may be grant opportunities, since this generator is obviously supporting township building, our emergency response, our ambulance, which is a regional ambulance, and our police, whether there's any grant potential, or is there some sort of partnering thing? I don't know how, I'm not exactly sure how, what our relationship is with Plymouth. But my understanding is when the power is out in the building that everybody's down.
That is correct. The Plymouth ambulance is actually on their own power. So we actually have I'm not an electrician. Pico
meters.
Thank you. That was very difficult. So we actually have two meters. So there's one for the township building portion, and then there's one for the Plymouth ambulance portion. So I do need to, and we just kind of figured that out more or less earlier today, was as I was walking with the contractor that finally came out. So I will be putting a call into Tom Trajansky at the Plymouth ambulance to discuss, you know, a partnership with that. Now the township building, we know, uses X amount of electric. We'll have to include that. So I don't know that it'll save us anything really, since they're already divided, but it would probably be beneficial to have the whole building on at one time. You also look at grants. We're an emergency management center in case the Limerick Power Plant would have a problem, so we'll look to that to see if we can get some, you know, help with that in that way.
So were you saying that the ambulance has their own backup, or they don't?
No, they don't have a backup either. So if things go out, they go out. Now, okay. The ambulance was, and very much appreciate them, after the tropical storm, the ambulance did bring a generator up to run their facility. And they had extra power on that allowed us to get the police station up and running for a short time. So with limited capacity. So they brought in a rental unit to run their side. So.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Any other questions?
Mark, this is Marla. We have a slight amount of extra money this year, can we possibly use that for the backup generator if we have any?
We won't. There won't be time this year to get it done. it's definitely going to be over $20,000. I want to get a better estimate of what it is. So it's probably going to have to be a bid project.
But I mean, if we had a little bit of leftover money this week, can we kind of roll it into next year's budget and reduce our deficit that way?
All of the way the township budget works is everything zeroes out at the end of the year, and then it goes into our reserves. So yes, it can. It doesn't work like a savings account.
I understand.
Pull out. So,
I understand. Okay.
You know, that may be something that we do want to look at. As we move forward, we may want to develop, and I think Terry talked about this at the, after we talked with the auditor, develop a capital improvement fund that at the end of the year, if we have any overages or anything, we would move some money into the capital improvement fund each year. And then when we have a larger expense come up, we'd move the money out of the capital and into the general fund budget to make those purchases. You know, that's something we can plan on as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
My understanding too, again, this is Chuck, is with the generator that there may be modifications to the building required to in terms of the circuits and how they're powered.
We're gonna need so right now our generator is antique or classic, so we might be able to, you know, if we find a person that likes the hit or miss engine, we might be able to make some money off of our generator. But yeah, we don't have a really good automatic transfer switch. You know, now when you put a generator on a building, as soon as the electric goes out, there's a transfer switch. The transfer switch switches, it protects the building from the street side, and then it, you know, kicks in and starts providing electric to the building.
And there are only certain circuits that are wired into that generator.
Currently, right now, yeah, so we have that two things to look at there too. Do we do the whole building? Or right now, the township building has one or two orange outlets in each office that if the electric goes out, the old generator will power those orange outlets, but then we have to run around and switch everything. And like you lose your server and that kind of stuff in that time. Warren has a question.
Are you unmuting him?
Yeah, I'm trying. There Warren is.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
If we're going to be going through the process of doing a lot of modification to the electrical system for the switchover and all that, would that be a good time to consider the option of putting up solar panels and, you know, converting a building over and saving money in that respect too? Doing that at the same time?
That's a very good question.
Hey, the fire department did it. Mm-hmm.
I think they still have an emergency generator.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying there's probably going to be the combination of things you need to do with wiring to that might be an overlap.
Okay, I can look into that.
Yeah, I've known people who've gotten to a leasing agreement, so they don't own the hardware on the roof, but they derive a benefit from it financially.
We can lease our roof space.
Essentially, there may be a requirement on the age of the roof, whether or not that has to be.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, not to belabor this issue, but one thing I've learned about solar panels is you don't want to put it on a roof that needs to be re-roofed, because it's quite a thing to have to replace your roof with solar panels on there to take them off and put them back. So you definitely want to put it on a roof that has a 25 to 30 year life.
Remaining life, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if that's the case that we're going to need a new roof sometime in the next 10 years, maybe at least we can have our wiring that has to do with the switchover for the emergency system take into consideration in the future going to solar.
Sure.
And there's all kinds of other things. I know that like some of these companies are developing solar, what do they call them? Solar roof tiles. So there's all kinds of technology coming up.
Yeah, so I will continue to work on the emergency generator. That's been a very tough struggle to get contractors out. So I will continue to work on that and do my best to have much better information in 1 week from today.
I have a few questions of her.
Yep. Go ahead.
Yep. So again, Mark, thanks for your efforts and patience with the generator. I know it's been driving you batty for at least a month now. So good job. And thanks for putting together the presentation for tonight. One of the items, I guess, just I noticed both in the revenue and expenditures, the building inspector and the permits, but it seems like they're balancing out pretty well. I guess, do you have any thoughts?
So we make a little bit of money on the permits. Yeah. That come in, but that's kind of offset by the need of the township to have code enforcement, which is more of your neighbor to neighbor questions.
Sure.
So when someone calls up to complain that a neighbor, I don't know, has a light shining in their backyard, something to that effect, and our zoning or code enforcement person just goes out as a code enforcement official, the township does pay for that time and that energy. When the code enforcement people are handling a permit, the permit fees 95% of the time cover all of the of that permit process. So they, from the beginning to the end, they cover that, and the township makes a little bit of money. It's by no means a money maker for the township.
Right.
And like I said, most of the time, the code enforcement portion of that job with your neighbor complaints, that kind of stuff, takes care of that extra money that we make on permits.
Okay. I guess just asking from kind of you see the interactions and the day in and day out better than we do. Is it anything we should be looking into this year as far as our code enforcement agency, or are we good for now?
I think for the time being, we're good. Next year, I do think that may be an area that we dive into a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, when the numbers get to a certain point, I guess it doesn't make sense to continue with the consulting or going to a dedicated person, but we'll let you kind of let us know when it's time to look at options.
Yeah.
And then I guess as far as if you could, I know we've presented on this a few times, but if you could just give the 20 versus 21 road paving kind of projects and what got pushed to 21.
I have that, if you don't mind, I have that in the last
slide. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, continue on.
Then we'll hit that door in liquid fuels.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And then, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
All right. Sorry. All right, so next we have the sewer fund, then we'll get into liquid fuels. Everybody, sorry, is everyone ready to move on?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, the sewer fund, the 2020 year end, sewer connection fees budgeted was $110,000. We're currently at $148,000. Kind of like we were talking about with Marla, the Arcadia development came in very strong as the housing market began to boom. So did a little better than anticipated there. Sewer rent has been consistent the past years, and we expect the end of the year budget to be the $760,000, and we expect to meet that. The total budgeted revenue for 2020 was $909,000, and our estimated end of year is around $956,000. So I expect to do better in the sewer budget. In the way of revenue, expenses, we showed a pretty significant savings by lowering the sewer loan with a refinancing. We expect sludge hauling at the end of this year to come in significantly lower than budgeted. and all other line items are expected to end right near the budgeted numbers. The 2020 sewer budget, if we receive the grant, so we submitted for the grant refund for the manhole projects. If we get that money in 2020, we expect that the budget will actually end slightly positive. If we don't get that money in, it'll come in next year, but you know, it's been a very good year in the sewer budget. For 2021, the sewer fund income, right around 1,100 sewer customers, you know, $175 per quarter, $700 per year. So $770,000 in sewer rent per year. For a new customer to connect, the EDU is $7,405.26. So with Arcadia not knowing that they have three homes right now that they still need to do the connection fee for, next year we're going to budget for three homes at the $22,215. So we are bringing that connection fee budget number down significantly in 2021. Sewer fund expenses. The sewer loan is one of the major expenses each year. In 2020, like I just said, we refinanced the loan and showed a significant savings in 2020. In 2021, our loan payment will be down approximately $70,000 from where it was supposed to be before we did the refinance. Our 2021 loan payment will be $506,663. Obviously, the water treatment plant is our other greatest expense. In 2020, we hired a wastewater engineer. Major costs at the wastewater treatment plant are sludge hauling. It's been very consistent this year, and as I said, we'll show a significant savings from the estimated budget, and we will continue that budget number into the 2021 budget from where we were in the past. We were at $115,000 budgeted this year, and you know, we expect to come in close to $20,000 under budget. Chemicals are another high cost item at the plant, and we are currently in the process of reviewing our chemical usage at the plant. We had a new chemical company come in with the help of Mr. Preston and did what's called a jar test. So not to get into it too much, but they take product from the plant and they separate it into beakers, and then they put different chemicals in it to see what product works better and at what rate. So right now we're told that we have some promising results. So we have to kind of put together a final, they're going to put together a final report for us. But having some very positive information coming in about the chemicals at the plant. And utilities is another area at the plant that is expensive. The nice thing, and that we're told from talking to some other plants, and Bob and I are talking in the process of trying to put together RFP. So our electric is very consistent at the plant. You know, the pumps run the same amount of time every day. The air runs the same amount every day. So we're looking to see if we can get some better pricing from electric companies. With some guidance from Bob, we've been turning our aeration down a little bit. It still works the same. It's just not using as much energy. Repair and maintenance is another major expense of the plant, but it's a very important part of the plant, as we have everything serviced every year to make sure that we try to get as much life out of all the components of the plant as possible. So the sewer loan, the red or orange-ish red was the original sewer loan. And then if you look at the gray, that is with the refinance numbers. So you can see that's giving us a significant savings for many years.
Mark, on the slide before, and now that Bob's on the line, with the electric being consistent for the use of the pumps, but I know in the winter it seems to spike, and we were told in the past it's because they have the heat part of the plant. Was there any discussion of insulation or any other way to save on in the winter, or is that not an option?
We haven't discussed that. Bob, do you have any experience with putting some insulation on those concrete buildings?
The insulation across the SBRs and the post and EQ, that depending on the situations in winters sometimes makes a difference, but with the volume and the size of the plant, it's really hard to encapsulate the heat. You're trying to keep the bacteria, the biology of the plant alive. Insulation in the buildings should be there from the construction 2 years ago. We could probably put more in the ceilings to close things off a little better.
Was there any insulation now?
I think there's some in the ceilings. I'm not sure about the walls. I think the walls are mostly just concrete block.
I don't recall seeing any in the walls. Maybe there's vermiculite or something in the block. I don't know what they would have done.
They're probably filled CMU block standard.
Mm. But okay. The post EQ is basically where, you know, where they're going through the tubes. That has to be kept obviously warm enough so the water doesn't freeze, right?
Correct. And that's what a lot of the aeration does. The aeration keeps it moving so it doesn't freeze as readily. Mm-hmm. But it's in the winter months, it's the bacteria. You got to keep your biology alive. So you need the energy consumption or the mixing and everything else to keep it warm and active.
Okay.
We can look at some of the buildings, though, Terry, and give that a
that's fine. I just knew it was a topic from previous, and although the pump usage might be similar, I do recall the electric
spike. Yeah, we do spike in December, January, February, sometimes March.
Thank you.
Yep.
So the hope is, though, Mark, before we jump off this page, perhaps a change in chemicals may give us a savings there. That's what we're hoping to see, right?
Correct. Either a cheaper chemical or a chemical that uses less that then, you know, would cost less. So that's the goal.
Optimize.
Yep. Yeah. Again, this is the sewer loan.
Okay. Before you jump off that.
Oh, yep. Sorry.
Just to be clear, the new loan versus the old loan, it's the same term. So they're both, I believe they were both 30-year loans. So there's no.
Yes, we didn't change the term. Just we didn't change the term, just the rates.
Right.
So the sewer fund expenditures. You know, this So this blue is the debt that then comes over here, and that shows you the interest and the debt principal. You know, then we have the plant operations and sludge hauling. So that kind of gives you. Most of our budget is in this 55%. It's in the debt. So it's the debt principal and the debt interest, you know, is 55% of our sewer fund budget. And our expected expenditures are the $914,763. Next slide gives us some more detail. So in the sewer fund, our revenue, in total revenue, we're looking at $793,500. Total expenses, we're looking at $914,000. Again, we're looking to decrease the chemicals at the plant, so that'll help to bring some of the expenses down. With the current budget projections in the sewer fund, we'll have a $121,263 deficit budgeted in 2021. Again, we have in our reserves, we have enough money to cover that deficit for 2021. And in 2020, this year, where we had kind of the same deficit, you know, we're going to actually end the budget in positive numbers. So that kind of. Anyone have any other questions about the sewer fund before I move on? All right, so we'll go on to liquid fuels, which is the money that we get from PennDOT to do some road projects and stuff. So in 2020, originally our plan was to pave Evergreen, Second, Schwenk, and Woodside. Got into the year, had to work through some things with PennDOT, which pushed us back a little bit. And then we had the unfortunate tropical storm, which also pushed things back. So in 2020, myself and the board decided we'd pave Evergreen Road in-house. That was completed last week. We would pave Schwenk Road using the equipment bid contractor, which is in process now. That started today, and we hope to have that executed and finished tomorrow. With the storm that threw us, you know, kind of for a loop, we had to repair Kratz Road, Smith Road, and a small portion of Woodside. So that's kind of threw us off and needed to save some money in liquid fuels for that project if we need. But what that did is it unfortunately made us have to push off some projects until next year. So in 2021, you know, we'll plan to pave Second Avenue, complete Woodside, and then a small piece up there in that area of Second Woodside and Perkiomen is Third Ave. So get that paved and completed. That's a smaller project. We kind of did a smaller project this year. So if we go down to 2022, by doing some smaller projects, that'll give us a pretty good savings in our liquid fuels fund so that in 2022, we can do a pretty significant project, you know, pave a pretty good length of road. In 2020 and now in 2021, we are moving the salt purchases from the general fund into the liquid fuels fund, which liquid fuels allows us to do. In 2021, like to purchase a dump truck with either a 5-year lease to own, or you do a lease, 5-year lease with a $1 buyout at the end, or just do a 5-year loan, like a regular car loan. Every year, we're allowed to use 22% of our liquid fuels money for vehicle purchases. So that would come in next year. We're supposed to get approximately 160,000 in liquid fuels. So a purchase of a dump truck with a 5-year lease is going to be about a $20,000 payment each year for 5 years. So we'd have that set debt that to take care of. So in 2022, like I said, we'd do a larger project, and then we would continue to, you know, our payments for the dump truck and any salt purchases.
Mark, when you say larger project, do you have any idea how, in terms of miles or distance, what that would be?
I don't have that number exactly yet. I mean, it's going to depend on what our liquid fuels money comes in, you know, in 2022, you know, and hopefully we don't have another storm that blows out roads and such. So,
right.
Okay. Yeah. And like this year, we're doing very good with the gas and oil prices being down. Blacktop was down, you know, in price, but you know, that's the other unknown is the blacktop price. So I don't have a footage amount for you for 2022.
Okay.
Mark, so I know one of the items that's come up recently regarding roads is the from the bridge to 29 on Spring Mount Road. And you had asked Carol to give an opinion on options for there. And I believe repaving is the only option there. Is that something that we'd want to schedule for 2021?
We've gotten a note from the emergency management coordinator and the chief of the fire company that they've slid twice at the intersection with the fire trucks at the intersection of Spring Mount. If you're on Spring Mount, you're coming across the bridge going on to 29. They've had a little issue where they slid a little bit when they were trying to stop. We did look at it. We tried to come up with some different options. We called in the company that did the chip seal there. But unfortunately, it's too late to do anything with chip seal now. And at this time, PennDOT has now reversed. PennDOT changes things quite often. They're now, you know, Carol, what was it? They're not permitting or they're not suggesting to do intersection any longer with chip seal. What was that?
Yeah, their policies seem to be changing about intersections. In some cases, they're stopping chip seal before they get to intersections. We consulted with a number of sources, PennDOT, two different contractors that do chip seal. I found a research paper on exactly this problem from Texas A&M that the Texas DOT sponsored. And really our answers are either put on another coat of chip seal, which was already done and we're not happy with it, put a micro-surfacing over the area, or put down an asphalt overlay. There doesn't seem to be a price advantage to micro-surfacing in this limited area, so an asphalt overlay appears to be the simplest and least expensive solution that's supported by the research.
Is that something we can do like this year still, or can we use liquid fuels from 2020 if there's any left over? How does that, what's the deadline to use those?
We could, the deadline for liquid fuels is Saturday. So we wouldn't be able to use liquid fuels to repave it this year. If we want to get it repaved this year, we do have, you know, we are looking at an overage, you know, being positive in the general fund and in the in both the road material and road wages, you know, we're below budget. So we could squeak it in the general fund. I think an estimate to have that paved, which would just key cut it at the 29. So mill out a piece at 29 and mill out a piece at the bridge, you know, and we try to take out that bump a little bit. When you come off that bridge, it would be $10,000, and we could get that done this year if the board would like. If not, we could put it under liquid fuels for, we should have plenty of room in liquid fuels for 2021 to do that there.
It seemed to be the last we talked that the note, at least I think it was from Chief Gammon, was that their opinion was it's getting worse over the months here. So I don't know. I'd like to see something be done there, whether it's before winter, and the only option there is general fund, I take it, or immediately after winter with liquid fuels.
Yeah, I this is Chuck. I agree with Terry's sentiment. It's we've had two occurrences, and my understanding is they were both in dry conditions. And I think that this is something that needs to be addressed, you know, very high priority in the sense of getting it done, hopefully before the winter. You know, God forbid that there's a third instance and we're not as lucky and people get hurt or vehicles are damaged, then we have much bigger problems.
If it's the board's direction, Carol and I will get a hold of our equipment contractor tomorrow and see if we can get it in the books for this year. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think we could definitely get it done. We would have to do it under general fund, but as I said, at this time we have an overage in general fund, and both those line items in the budget, you know, have room in them to take the manpower and the materials.
And you said that would come in about 10,000, Mark?
Yeah, give or take. Yep.
It seems pretty reasonable. If that's something we can get done sooner than later, I would say go right ahead.
Yeah, I would concur with the other, you know, Chuck and Terry and Noel as well. It seems like it's a prudent decision. Do we have to vote on it, or is vocal act, you know, can we just vocalize our support?
Why don't we just have a motion?
Sure.
Okay.
Terry, you want to make it?
Sure.
I'll put you on the spot.
Yeah, I motion we bid and repave Spring Mount Road from the bridge to 29 at around the $10,000 amount. How was that?
Wonderful. Just one question. If it's only 10,000, do we have to bid?
No, we don't have to bid.
No.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Scratch it.
I second your motion, Terry.
Okay,
without the bid.
Terry,
yes.
Terry Burr makes the motion. Noel Halter seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor of repaving or milling and paving on the Spring Mount Road, say aye.
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 Sorry, are we paving or milling and paving?
Well, it's milling and paving. It's two things.
It's just not milling the whole surface. It's just milling where the blacktop will meet the, correct me if I'm wrong, Carol, where the blacktop will meet the bridge.
Right.
They're going to mill down a little bit so that there's not a big bump coming onto the bridge. And then again, mill at 29 again to smooth the blacktop into the roadway.
Well explained. Gotcha. Okay.
I don't know about that, but thank you.
So can I call it milling and paving?
Sure. E-cutting and paving.
E-cutting and paving. Spring Mount Road. All in favor of key cutting and paving Spring Mount Road between the bridge and Route 29, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously.
We'll put that on top priority for tomorrow. Okay. Get a hold of them right away to see if we can get that done.
So sorry for stealing your budget presentation on that.
That's all right.
So I went back to last year's kind of budget, just a lot of the digging we did, and I hate to bring up a topic that is not a good one, but for the past couple years, I know that another, I don't know if it's liquid fuels, but a road project was regarding painting the Gerloff Road Bridge. Is that something we need to plan out in multiple years?
Hold on 1 second, Bob.
Maybe I can be of some help. I actually just reached out to the state trying to get us some grant money towards that. And I'm still, I got some favorable response, and I'm still working with those folks to find out if we could get a grant opportunity for that. It's not urgent, but, you know, we noticed some points of corrosion a few years ago now, and we all know that things like that get worse every year. I have to be honest, I have not looked at it recently at all, but I think it's a grand idea to start looking for grant funds and looking towards the need to do that, because when we got an estimate for that a few years ago, I believe it was about $80,000. So it's a big undertaking.
Okay. So thank you for that initiative, Carol. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And can I follow up with one more question for Carol on that? What's the frequency by which we should be looking to tune up that bridge? Because I imagine it's like all metal bridges, painting on a periodic basis, right?
Yeah, well, the bridge was reconstructed, rebuilt and painted in 1996. So it seems like we get about a 30-year life out of that paint from our experience so far.
That's a good lifespan.
Yeah.
For a bridge, not for a person. Yeah.
And can we rededicate it back to the state?
it is a historic bridge.
Yeah.
For those of you familiar with Phoenixville Columns.
Yes.
So maybe there is a special pot of money that we can tap into because of its historic nature.
That's exactly who I was talking to, sir. I'll follow up with more information.
Great. Thank you.
I have Bob had a question.
Yeah, Bob Burns, Ziegler Road. I've got a couple questions on the budget. Mark, under the police, I don't have that slide open right now, but I believe you call out like 700,000 and some change there.
Yes.
Would that include a part-time clerical position as well?
At this time, it's a possibility it could. Right now, the chief and I have talked. We want to concentrate on getting the police back to where they were at the beginning of 2020. So once we would hire a full-time officer and a part-time officer, the swing for salary, depending on what experience they bring with them, can be pretty different. So once we decide who we're going to hire, we can look at what is left in the budget and look to that with the board, and also just start to have that conversation with the board in 2021 to see if that would fit in.
Okay, thank you on that one. Under the liquid fuels, you talk about this dump truck, and I'm concerned about the dump truck. I'm assuming that you're looking for like an F-550 with a mini dump. Is that correct?
Yeah, with a dump, plow, spreader.
Okay. So I think the issue really comes down to, where is our fleet right now? Have we consulted with, a fleet expert to come in and give you recommendations on the existing fleet that we have, what the life expectancy is, where the maintenance is going to be, to find out exactly what the need is? It sounds like you're saying that this dump truck, fully equipped with the plow, spreader, and everything, is now like $100,000 vehicle. One of the concerns that I have is that back in 2017, the previous board spent $18,000 to upgrade and repair our international dump truck, which I'm assuming we still have, that we hardly ever use. And, I think at this point in time, where we are with the budgets, to actively look to, purchase a $100,000 vehicle, might not be prudent right now. If it's a wish list item, for the road crew to have versus, practically finding out, where we stand. I mean, if the mini dump that we have now right now is on its last legs, then yeah, that might give us some more thought. But, $18,000 and change was spent 3 years ago to retrofit this other truck, which apparently isn't getting used very much. And I believe here again, I think that truck is only used primarily in the winter for salting and plowing.
Yes, you're correct, Bob. That truck is mostly used for salting and plowing, and we have to have the trucks that we can have on the road. The mini, what you're calling the mini dump, is the F-550, is, a regular use vehicle. And I apologize, I can't find I do have information on that. But
well, I understand that mini dump and the two other trucks with the utility bodies on the back, they might be older vehicles. They might be 2004, 2005. I don't know exactly what years they are, But the limited amount of time that they're used and with the small miles that they're put on each and every year, as I said, you know, in order for you and for the board to make an intelligent decision, it would almost be beneficial if, you know, if we don't have somebody that's checking on our fleet maintenance, and we have Writer's Garage who is doing that, you know, do we really need to go and do this next year? Is this something that, you know, can wait so that we can use that money? You know, sounds like you're saying $20,000 a year for the next 5 years. So, you know, if that $20,000 can be used as far as additional paving or other concerns throughout the liquid fuels portion of it, that might be the best bet. Now, you know, if you do have information that says, you know, the existing mini dump is, you know, about to lose its tranny or whatever, and we really, you know, we need to make some kind of decision. It doesn't sound like you're saying that this new addition would retire the other mini dump. It would just be another vehicle for the road crew to use.
All right, thank you.
Okay, on the sewer deficit, you had mentioned that $121,000 and change would be covered by the reserves. Are the reserves you're talking about, are there reserves in the sanitary, or are you talking about the general reserves? Because I thought we couldn't commingle and cover the sewer fund out of the general fund.
Correct. That's out of the sewer fund.
So the sewer fund has a capital reserve as well?
Nothing has a capital reserve. They have, the way our budgets are done, there's no capital reserve. It's cash. We have the cash, which is our savings account. We have the money in there to cover the deficit.
But what I'm saying to you is, are those savings accounts listed as sewer? Is it from the sewer fund? It's not from the gym.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that answers that question. And then I don't know if Bob Preston's still on the line, and whether he's aware that, you know, where these lines are going to go in Babington, Riverside, and Fulmer, even though I believe Carol had some drilling done.
Bob, I'm going to jump in on that one.
Go ahead.
They're still working on getting their package together so they can have something for the board to review. So I don't think at this time we're that far along to get into the details.
Now, all I was trying to say is that we were kind of told that there wasn't any rock or boulders in that area, and we know that last year's equipment contractor put the storm sewer in and came across a bunch of boulders that supposedly weren't supposed to be there. So if Bob's looking at contractors to do this additional work, you know, is he mentioning to them that there's a high possibility of boulders that are going to be in the area of the new infrastructure that could cause, you know, additional charges and fees, and, you know, here again, depending on the size of these things, could also cause additional paving and repair. That's what I was trying to say there.
Okay, understood. I think Bob knows that now, and as I said, he and Carol are working on the numbers so that they can present us with some information, and so the board can actually get up to speed on what the options are right now. So I think, you know, those are good questions to ask when we actually start to move along a little bit more. But I know Bob and Carol, those have been questions that have come up over the years. So I'm sure that they are aware of it at this point.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you for your time.
Yep. Okay, so that is the end of the budget presentation, Mark.
Yep, but I didn't get to my question slide. But
I know.
I will show it just for fun. So yes, if anyone has any other questions.
So the plan is then for next week, is that right?
Yep, next week we'll, again, I'll go over it. You know, we'll get some more numbers on Friday, you know, so over the weekend and Monday, I'll update everything, get that to the board by the end of the day Monday, and then have a good plan for a budget that hopefully I'll have Monday, Tuesday, because next week is election, so our meeting is on Wednesday. I want to make sure everyone knows that. So, yeah, hopefully end of the day Monday I'll have an updated budget for you guys, and then look to approve that on Wednesday so that we can begin the advertising, and then approve that at the December 1st meeting.
Okay. So I'll move along here as far as the next agenda item after the budget discussion is this new business. And is there any new business that anybody from the board is aware of for this meeting? Hearing none, I'll give Mark about another minute or so to answer. I believe he's taking either a call or a question from a resident. Mark, all right. Is there any new, yep. New business?
Yeah, I had a question from Sherry Schweikert. Oh. Is the money for the sewer fund coming out of the savings that's to be used for the sewer expansion project? No, it is not coming out of the money for the sewer expansion project. It is coming out of the sewer fund, the regular sewer fund, which has close to $500,000 in it, cash.
Okay.
Now that will go down a little bit with the, you know, the payment of the loan, but yes, there's money in the sewer fund, the regular sewer fund, to handle that deficit.
Okay. Mark,
all right, and I'm sorry. Go ahead.
To new business, unless there are more questions that I'm not aware of.
I do not see any. New business. Just wanted to. Peter, are you on the line?
Yep.
Yeah.
You just want to address the conditional use on Thursday.
Yeah, just, you know, as I sent you in an email, but just so the public can hear, it's looking like even though we will have a hearing on Thursday night, it will just be to continue the hearing to another date certain, which will be announced on Thursday night. So Thursday night, you know, we'll basically just announce the date the actual hearing will take place. There'll be no testimony or evidence presented Thursday night, and it should be a very quick hearing. Mark and I just wanted to let members of the public be aware that most likely that is what's going to happen Thursday night. Thanks.
Just to clarify, Peter, you don't mean that the hearing will be quick. The start of the hearing will be abbreviated in that session and carried forward, right?
Right, yeah, just that night. Thursday yeah. Night will be quick, but the hearing itself will take a while.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't want to give people false expectations.
No. We will open the hearing, and then it will be continued on a different night.
Okay, great. Correct. Thank you.
That was all we had for new business.
Okay, so that brings us to public comment. Do we have any public comment at this time?
We'll wait a minute until you get anything in.
I'll jump in. On the agenda, we listed the meetings coming up for November. The Agricultural Security Area Advisory Committee will not meet on Monday at 6. We'll cancel and meet again in February.
Great. Thank you, Terry. So while we're waiting, I'll just list the meetings. We do have Park and Rec, which is on Monday, November 2nd. November 4th, again, is a Wednesday, the day after Election Day. That'll be our general monthly meeting, the Board of Supervisors. November 12th, which is a Thursday, is a comprehensive plan meeting. November 19th, which is a Thursday, is the Planning Commission meeting. November 23rd, which is a Monday, is an Environmental or EAC board meeting. And then November 24th is a Tuesday, which is our Board of Supervisors workshop meeting for November. As I'm sure everybody is aware, voting is taking place at the Township and Firehouse, unlike what happened in May. Any questions? Oh,
just, Terry, a quick question for you. Does the ASA board meet every quarter? Is that your
every quarter? Yeah. Pardon? Yeah, correct. The first Monday every quarter.
And do you have a Zoom? Is it Zoom?
It is. Yeah, it's a normal Zoom link that Mark initiates.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, all of our public meetings use the same meeting number. Mm-hmm. Mark, do we have any comments from the public?
I do not see any. Let me just update my email one more time. I do not have anything, Chuck, if you...
Great. So can we have a motion for adjournment?
I'll so move.
I'll second.
Great. Noel Halter makes the motion. Marla Hexter seconds. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Great. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, guys.
Thank you. Everybody have a good night.